This is the Rundown. The Rundown. Hosted by Luke Lipinski. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
I think there's definitely a learning curve to it. I definitely am not going to sit here and say that all of our struggles are due to that, because that's definitely not the case. But as players, we've talked about it, and there's definitely been a little bit of a difference, you know, in what we're looking for and how we're going about it at bat. But there's opportunities where it's definitely helped, and I think our hitting coaches do a great job coming up with a game plan. But I think the thing that we're learning and getting better at now is that each individual hitter has their own strengths and weaknesses and their own, you know, certain areas of the plate that hits the ball really hard in. So just because the hitting coaches say, okay, this is the exact tunnel we need to look in, we also need to, as hitters, personalize it and know that I may be a little bit different than Goldie, and Goldie may be a little bit different than Pollock or Lamb, etc. So that's kind of how we're approaching it now, and I think it's going to get rolling pretty good.
That's the voice of Nick Ahmed, who was on Bickley and Murata yesterday afternoon talking about the sort of change that the Diamondbacks have employed at the plate. Really, it started towards the end of last season. It's been more noticeable this season because the team just hasn't been hitting very well. It was, you know, you can look at last season, you could say, okay, well, Paul Goldschmidt didn't hit very well the last month of last season, but that could be circumstantial because he had the arm issue towards the end of last year. Maybe he was just in a slump. I mean, he had been hitting really well all of 2017 prior to that. So there's a few different ways to look at that. We're not ever going to know for sure that the team changed their hitting approach and that threw Goldie off last year. But when you look at this year and you see nobody really hitting, it raises questions. Now, A.J. Pollock was hitting just fine in 293, 11 home runs in 40 games. So do the math. That's about a 44 home run pace, which would shatter his career high, and he was hovering up around 300. But nobody else is hitting. David Peralta was kind of hitting. He's hovering around 200 over the last month. He's at 259 on the year. John Ryan Murphy is hitting as a starter, but he's not starting enough games yet. And it's not like he's tearing the cover off the ball. He's just, he's been impressive for what you expected from him, and he's been very impressive compared to what everybody else is doing. But the bottom line is, whether it's the humidor, whether it's just odd luck, whether it's some unknown factor, or it's their changed approach at the plate, the Diamondbacks are not hitting well as a team. It feels weird to say this after these last three games because they've scored 21 runs in these three games against the Cincinnati Reds, but I don't think that any of us have to think that hard to go back a couple games when they were scoring a run or two runs per game for about 3 weeks. So something's up. So that was Nick Ahmed when he was asked about it. Now, this is Diamondbacks general manager Mike Hazen, who was on with Doug and Wolf this morning. Obviously, he is a strong proponent of the analytical approach to the game of baseball. This is what he had to say.
You know, I'm not exactly sure, you know, what he's specifically referencing. I don't think on anything from a large-scale standpoint was employed. I think on the individual level, certainly there were, you know, adjustments that we're looking to make for each guy in order to help him. You know, I think prior to this last run of games, we had swung the bat quite well. Nothing had changed between what we had started to do at the beginning of the year through that period. So I think we just, you know, the hits just didn't fall in as much.
Now, the logical question, you know, people can look and they could say, okay, Nick Ahmed's not hitting that well this season, but he's not, you know, he's not on the team for his hitting. And you can look up and down the lineup and you can say, yeah, we just paid Ketel Marte a lot of money, but I guess he's never really been that great of a hitter. But the guy that none of us can really accept what is going on or make any sense of it is Paul Goldschmidt, who had a hit today. He's 7-for-24 in his last six games. He had yesterday off, but 7-for-24 in his last six games that he has started. That's the one that nobody can get past, for obvious reasons. And so Mike Hazen was asked, did Paul Goldschmidt change his swing at the plate?
No, I mean, he hasn't. As far as we've had conversation and can tell, you know, things look pretty similar. He, you know, I don't think he's impacting the same baseball pitch-wise that he did. But I think that would be the case for anybody that's not, you know, hitting exactly as they have been in the past. I don't think that there's anything all that specific other than probably some slight adjustments.
I just, this is my own personal opinion. I can't imagine somebody coming to Paul Goldschmidt with a new hitting approach with the career he's had and saying, you have to do this. So maybe it was brought to the team in general, or maybe it was sort of made known that it was available. Hey, you know, if you want to try this new approach, you know, come talk to this guy. He's going to help you work on it, and we'll sort of tailor it to each individual because every hitter is different. But I can't imagine it was ever forced on Paul Goldschmidt, and I also can't imagine that Goldie would ever stick with it for more than 5, 6, 7, 8 games because of what he's accomplished in Major League Baseball. So just to sort of put a bow on this, Mike Hazen went on that he's as confused as anybody with what's going on with Goldie.
Hitting is can be a very tricky thing. It's why it's so hard. It's the hardest thing to do in the game, is because little things can get you out of whack at times, and it takes some time. It takes some repetition. It takes balls falling in to get you back on those runs, and then you go crazy for a while, and nobody talks about it anymore. I just think that's the nature of the game. I don't think there's been anything that we've seen, that we've talked about, that is, and obviously we're looking at everything in depth. Sure. Every day for him and for everybody else. It's what our coaches do. I don't think we've noticed or seen anything or had conversation with him that would lead us that there's anything significant that's different.
Coming the day after the Roseanne Barr story.
Yeah.
It just goes to show you that if you've accomplished anything in your life, you can only lose on Twitter. You can't win. You know, there's nothing really to be gained from Twitter if you are someone of any sort of stature at all. But you can lose everything or a lot. So we've seen it cost a woman a TV show. You know, those are hard to come by, network TV show.
Yep.
And potentially, let's see what happens with the 76ers. The second thought on that is we have to add to the list of things that can derail a promising young team as the Sixers are. So injuries, egos, you know, salary cap crunchers, and now potentially front office mischief on Twitter.
It was J.A. Donde who joined Bickley and Murata this afternoon talking about the whole Brian Colangelo fiasco. The Ringer did the story last night. It was funny, you know, there's so many people that just instantly started trending on Twitter. It was all anybody was talking about on Twitter. And it was basketball fan or not, Sixers fan or not, it was such an odd story. And it was such a long story. The Ringer does not do stories that are under like 10,000 words, but it was compelling. And it was one of those moments where you just saw it take off on Twitter last night. So that was J.A. Donde this afternoon. And, you know, there is, it's a sign of the time that we live in. And I wonder if we're going to get to a certain point where athletes, and I know, you know, Colangelo is not a player on the team, and this is, it's not him making himself accessible. If this was him, he was hiding the whole time. But I do wonder if we're going to get to a point where athletes are not as accessible or celebrities on Twitter, because as you heard J.A. Donde say right there, at a certain point, you can only lose what you have on Twitter. You're not, how much are you really gaining? And whether you agree with that or not, there's at least some truth to it. He also said, you know, add this to the list of things that might be able to derail a promising young team. I'm not sure I agree with that. If this is really Brian Colangelo, then I don't think he's going to be associated with the 76ers. They're not. Why would they do that? Especially if these 4 or 5 burner accounts were him, he was going after Markel Fultz and Joel Embiid. Those are two pretty big parts of your future, and they're bigger than Colangelo. The odd twist tonight, and this is still developing, is that, let's see, it was tweeted out by Did the Sixers Win? And I saw this earlier, but also thanks to a few people tweeted it into the show tonight. Take a look at it. The way it's being linked right now is that Colangelo's wife has a phone number ending in 91, although I'm assuming she's changing that number now, which almost certainly links her to 3 of the burner accounts.
My wife.
And the biggest story here is that it allows Jarrett to play the clip from Borat. I'm assuming
my
that's
wife.
Your favorite clip from one of your favorite movies, correct?
It is one of my favorite movies.
How do you not go dressed as Borat every year for Halloween?
My wife.
You know, I did dress as Borat for Halloween when you're in college.
Oh, yeah.
and it was before the movie when it was just the Ali G show on HBO.
Oh, okay.
And nobody knew who I was.
Yeah, why don't you do it now when people know who you are?
That's no fun.
Not just fun. It's like
boring. I was in character the entire night.
You've been in character.
So people just thought I was an entire. I even grew a mustache.
You've done that here. You might be like a distant relative of Borat if he was real.
You know, the funny thing about that is Sacha Baron Cohen is Jewish,
okay,
like myself.
Yes.
And he's actually speaking Hebrew when he's supposed to be speaking Uzbeki or whatever he's from.
Yeah, I think it's a made-up country, isn't it? Don't they like...
No, it's a real country.
It's not...
Kazakhstan. That's where he's from.
Oh, okay.
A made-up country?
No, Kazakhstan is not a made-up
country. There are proud people from the Eastern Bloc.
Yes, that play hockey.
That are listening right now.
But I thought that in the movie, he like blended like three countries together.
No.
I'll never question your Borat
Kazakhstan
knowledge. This is out of my range of expertise. Compared
my
to
wife.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, the odd twist now is that these burner accounts might actually be Brian Colangelo's wife.
Is that better or worse that this is now a revelation?
I don't think it's better, right? You're married. I'm not married. But let's say that you had let's say you were a successful man.
Okay? You're already too big of a leap.
just work with me here. We're going to go to the fiction portion of the show. If you were a successful man in a prominent role that was open to criticism, is it possible that your wife would defend you on Twitter? This is getting really out there. Would your wife even defend you in that situation?
She hasn't yet.
Okay. But if she were to do so in an undercover manner, is there any way you wouldn't know? Like, that's the thing. If this is Brian Colangelo's wife, he knew, right?
No. Why would he know, though?
Because it's his wife.
Yeah, but do you think he checks her Twitter account and her phone all the time? It wasn't like she was posting on, you know, NBA.com.
But some of these are pretty detailed messages in the sense that you have to have really intimate knowledge of the 76ers.
But that's also the difference between my wife defending me on Twitter and then what these tweets did.
Yeah, I guess I should have worded that differently. These are going undercover and basically, I mean, a lot of these tweets rip the previous, they rip Sam Hinkie. They rip the guy that succeeded Brian Colangelo in Toronto. They're ripping some of the players. They're giving out medical information that isn't supposed to be given out publicly. So it is an odd story. And trust me, I'm 100% certain it's going to continue to develop over the course of this evening and well into tomorrow. We'll come back more here on The Rundown. We are going to hear from Amin El Hassan next on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. Right, welcome back to The Rundown. Amin El Hassan joined Doug and Wolf this morning to give his thoughts, weigh in on the Brian Colangelo situation, but also, you know, who the Suns should and will take at number one overall.
What were you thinking as you read through the allegations against Brian Colangelo?
Well, there's a lot of different emotions that go on. The first one, obviously, is you look at all the circumstantial evidence and you're like, well, that seems like a pretty strong smoking gun right there. But then, you know, I won't lie, I thought about Brian, and I know Brian. I don't know Brian well. We're not best friends, but I know him well enough. And I just can't see Brian with that much time on his hands. This seems like a very time-consuming affair, multiple accounts and extended back and forths with normal, you know, just schmoes on Twitter. It just doesn't seem, I mean, Brian's always been a guy who's, you know, kind of, elite with his time. Let me put it that way.
Yeah. Yes.
Right. So the idea that he would somehow make time for absolute nobodies, you know, it's not him engaging writers directly, but just schmoes on the internet. It just doesn't fit what I know about Brian Colangelo and his personality. And then the last thing I thought of is, man, we live in a time where very literally there's an ongoing federal investigation, whether our elections were tampered through the internet, through social media and things like that. So it's not that far-fetched to ask just for a second, could this also be a manipulation? I'm not saying it is. I'm just saying I don't know, and I don't know what to believe anymore because we live in a different It's a very different age. I think it's a very scary time for all of us.
I say burn Twitter. I mean, just so you know.
Yeah. Hey,
burn Twitter.
Let me tell you something. The writer, Wright Thompson, he's a great writer for us over here at ESPN. Does a lot of great features. He did that big Tiger Woods feature, if you guys remember, a couple of years ago.
Oh, that was weird.
With Tiger Woods. With the, so Wright Thompson actually had this. He was on a podcast 6 months ago, and the things he was saying are so relevant today, basically, with that Brian Colangelo story, with the Roseanne Barr story. Basically, he's saying, you know, Twitter is stupid. I'll never get back on. I don't understand why anyone in the world would get to, you know, cuss me out and I get to read it on my own phone. Why would you do that? It's insane and doesn't help you in any way. It doesn't move the needle for traffic. If you got fired because of Twitter, first of all, you'd feel like the dumbest you know what to ever walk the face of the earth.
I mean, yes.
And you would be right.
Yes.
You would have killed the golden goose for nothing for trying to be funny.
Yeah.
I mean, but it's true. It's like, what are we all doing here?
That's very well said. And I'm going to tweet out that you just said that to me.
Yeah, exactly.
Meet El Hassan, ESPN NBA insider, joining Doug and Wolf. Do you see any reason why general manager Amin El Hassan would take Bagley, would take Doncic, would take Jackson, would take somebody other than DeAndre Ayton if you were in charge of the Suns?
Well, for me, Doncic is the really only other answer, and maybe the answer, and maybe Ayton's the other answer. There's strong arguments for either one. But when you talk about Doncic, you know, I look at the Suns, and you know, obviously, when you're the worst team in the league or one of the worst teams in the league, there's a lot of holes, right? It's not like, oh, there's this hole that they got to plug up. But the one that I think is one of the hardest to fill in is passing. The Suns have been a terrible passing team for a number of years, right? And that's something that I can't say, well, this guy that I draft, he'll get better as a passer. Much like some guys, you say, oh, he'll get better shooting. We look at Ben Simmons, he'll get better shooting. Or, you know, we look at, Ayton even. Like, he's a pretty good pick-and-pop player. Does it go out to NBA 3? Probably not right now, but it will soon because I can stick him in a gym and he can get better at that. I don't know how you stick a guy in a gym and he gets better at passing. I haven't seen that.
Yeah.
And so when you look at Doncic and he's got a supernatural level of passing feel and ability for a guy that age, by the way, 18, 19 years old, he's passing with the anticipation of a veteran who's seen these plays hundreds of times. That's special. And that's not only is it special at something that is pretty important, but also special at something that's pretty important that the Suns don't have a lot of, and you can't just go out and get someone else to do that. And so for that reason, to me, I lean towards Doncic. But again, you can sit here and make all the arguments for Ayton, and I'll be like, you're absolutely correct.
I mean, I do not want to put any qualifiers on this question whatsoever. Is DeAndre Ayton a generational talent?
No. I don't think he's a generational talent. When I think generational talent, I think of what we think of Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. By way of example, Donovan Mitchell had a tremendous year this year.
Yes.
Probably would have been Rookie of the Year any other year. And there's some people who are going to vote for him for Rookie of the Year this year. But he's not a generational talent. He's a really, really good player. He's going to be a multi-time All-Star, all those things. He's not a generational talent because 6'2", 6'3", scoring guards. I'm not saying they grow on trees. I'm just saying, you know, guys of that elite level are a lot easier to find than a 6'10 dude who runs point guard and can dunk on you.
Or a 7'1 center that's 260 and has the feet of Hakeem Olajuwon.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So when you say Ayton's a generational talent, I think he's an excellent player. I think he's deserving to be a number one pick, overall pick. But are we going to sit back and say one of the greatest to play his position or change the game, change the way the game is played at that position? I'm going to lean towards no.
Wow. Would you, you're kind of leading me into this. I didn't think I'd ask you, but I wouldn't say there's rumors about it because they've been mostly started by suggestions. A great article by Dan Bickley on our website at arizonasports.com kind of speculates, boy, there's a lot of rumblings in Minnesota about Karl Anthony Towns, whether or not he's happy. And the friendship with Devin Booker makes it an easy question to speculate about, but I don't know if it'll ever happen. Would you trade the rights to Ayton, the rights to Doncic, basically the number one pick, in a trade that includes Karl-Anthony Towns?
That's tough, right? It's tough because, first of all, you trade for him, and almost immediately you've got to decide whether you're going to extend him and Booker, right?
Right.
Booker's up for an extension this summer, mm-hmm. so is Towns. So without knowing whether this is going to work or not, you're going to be submitting a whole lot of money towards these two guys. The second part of this is, you know, the Suns are terrible defensively, another area of issue, right?
Mm-hmm.
Towns is not exactly, you know, if you talk to people in Minnesota, he hasn't been a defensive stalwart in his NBA career thus far.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he comes to a place like Phoenix and rehabilitates that. You know, usually when guys get better, it's because they go somewhere with either an established culture or, you know, or they feel like everyone's given up on them and they know, okay, I gotta really rework my image here. I don't know if Karl Towns has hit that rock bottom yet. I think he still thinks of himself, I'm great, it's Minnesota's fault. And so if he got traded to Phoenix, he'd look at it as an upgrade. It's definitely an upgrade in terms of zip codes, where you want to live. So that turns into a difficult kind of thing because now you're committing a lot of money to this guy and to, you know, obviously Booker at the same time without any real expectation of success other than you hope it works out. If you take Ayton, who, by the way, does a lot of things that Towns theoretically does, right?
Yeah.
At least you give yourself 3 or 4 years before you have to make a decision. Do I have to put down a whole lot of cash for this dude?
That's good.
And given that the Suns are where they are, there's no rush. I mean, it's not like Booker's 27 and you need that next piece to take advantage of his prime. He's barely old enough to drink himself. So,
yes.
You know, there's no problem with bringing Ayton, who's around that same age, and letting them go together and giving yourself some time before you have to start writing big checks across the board to a team that may not even make 500.
So there you go. Me and Al Hassan of ESPN on with Doug and Wolf this morning. Had a lot to say there. We don't have time to react to it right now, but I do think it's really quickly just interesting what he was saying about how at a certain point, you know, some famous people might not want to be on Twitter so much. And we kind of heard Jay Adande sort of allude to that earlier when we played that clip last segment. You know, let's say Brian Colangelo was responding to all these people as Brian Colangelo. I don't know. That wouldn't have made it better. He can't do that. And so at a certain point, if you are in that position, what's the value of being on social media? You can see people criticize you, and you can see people criticize you intelligently, but also just moronically because there's no repercussions, and yet you really can't respond. So I wonder where this is all going. Although, as crazy as it is to say, if we find out like tomorrow this wasn't Brian Colangelo and the whole thing was wrong and it was just a waste, I'm going to be disappointed. I don't know what that says about me, but at this point, I'm going to be disappointed if there's actually nothing to this story.
My wife.
All right, John Ryan Murphy, another home run today. It was a triple shy of the cycle. He joined Burns and Gambo this afternoon. We'll play a part of that interview next. You're listening to The Rundown on 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
The Rundown with Luke Lipinski, 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
1, 2, 3, let's go!
All right, Diamondbacks lost to the Cincinnati Reds this afternoon, 7-4. The game is already done. John Ryan Murphy, though, batted cleanup in that game, went 3-for-5, another home run. It was a triple shy of the cycle. In his last 6 games, he has 4 home runs and 8 RBI, and I should point out one of those 6 games, he just stepped in as a pinch hitter and had just 1 at-bat. So he has been on fire of late.
And he won't play for another 4 games.
Now he gets like a week and a half off. He joined Burns and Gambo following today's loss to Cincinnati.
Welcome back to the show. How are you today?
Good. What's going on, guys?
Not much, other than another big day for you at the plate and a lot of conversation about how much playing time you should get. Do you get the feeling you're going to be getting more?
I'd rather get the win than get 3 hits, I'll tell you that.
Well,
but,
go ahead, John.
Yeah, I'll take as much playing time as I can get, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I imagine, you know, you had to feel pretty good in that 9th inning today. First 2 guys get on base. You've got Goldie, Lamb, and yourself coming up. You had to feel pretty good about your chances in that 9th inning to maybe get that game tied and send it to extra innings.
Yeah, we always think we can win the game, you know, regardless of how many we're down by. We've shown that, you know, quite a bit this year. But yeah, it's a tough arm that we haven't faced yet this year. So it's a lot of first guys, you know, guys first step out against that guy, and he's really tough. So regardless of where we're at in the order, you know, that's a guy who you'd rather see once before.
This team,
you know, you're up in that kind of situation.
This organization places a lot of emphasis on pitch framing and defensive catchers, and we're all raving about what you've brought to the table offensively. I think you're batting right around 300 as a starter, hitting home runs, driving in runs. So this team needs the offense. We get it. But what are you doing defensively to try to fit into the mold of what they look for? Because they are very oriented in pitch framing and helping the pitchers along. Is that a big part of your game right now?
Yeah, like you said, I mean, the offense is great, but I kind of had that ingrained into me coming up in the Yankee organization. It was really just stressed that catching was going to come first and the offense was going to come second. So I kind of just learned that at a young age and, you know, pride myself on what I'm doing behind the plate.
Did you see when you were with the Yankees, did they still have Thurman Munson's locker in the locker room?
No, but Yogi was around quite a bit before he passed.
Yeah, because, you know, back in the old Yankee Stadium, I think they, for a long time, they still had that empty locker for Thurman Munson.
Yeah, I never got to go there. I was only a part of the new Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, yeah, he was one of my favorite players. Let's talk about Patrick Corbin. I mean, Corbin's had such a great this year. Today was a little off. He gave up the grand slam, which was tough because he almost got him out the pitch before. Gives up the grand slam, gives up the struggles today. We're not used to seeing that. What were you seeing in Patrick Corbin behind the plate?
Honestly, I think the score was a little misleading. You know, that was that one big inning. It was nice to get him some runs early. That's always good. But then, you know, they had that one inning with the grand slam. You know, you take that pitch away, and then he leaves one other mistake for a two-run homer later in the game, and that was the difference, you know. But up until that point, he gave us a chance to win. So I think he struck out 10 guys today. So, you know, the score might be a little misleading. It was really just a couple bad pitches.
John Ryan Murphy, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Three hits today, but the Diamondbacks lose 7-4 to the Reds. But you win the series, and it's a first series win since basically the beginning of this month. I'm sure the sweep would have been great. As you said, you'd rather have the win over playing time. How badly did this team need a series victory with everything that's gone on the last 3 weeks?
Yeah, like you said, we haven't done that. So we were on that roll right out of spring training, coming out hot and winning all those series. But, you know, I think we kind of forgot what that felt like. And like you said, the sweep would have been nice, but we won the series. And bottom line, that's a positive moving forward.
Yeah, you've got to look at this division and feel like it's still anybody's division. I mean, the Dodgers have come back. The Giants are there. Colorado's played good baseball. I mean, you got to feel like this division is really going to come down to the wire. So all of these games, even now, not the end of the season, but even now, these games are so important.
Yeah, every game, like you said, is important. You know, I think we believe that we're the best team in the division, but no one's said it's going to be easy. You know, it's going to be a fight till the end of the year. I think there's three or four good teams in the division, so it's going to be a lot of fun baseball.
Let's talk about your offense for a second, because that is literally the thing that all the fans are raving about, that everybody's looking at is what you've been able to contribute offensively. Why is it that you seem to be the only guy that's really having a great year offensively? There's so many guys struggling right now. We've talked about the Humidor. We've talked about information overload from the organization. You seem to be the one guy that hasn't been affected at all offensively. Why is that?
That's a good question, man. I mean, I can't speak for the team, you know, but like you said, there's been a lot of information thrown at us, and it's easy to, you know, it's easy to listen to the information and apply it when things are going good and everybody's hitting. But, you know, when we fall into a rut like we are or we have been in the last few weeks, you know, sometimes that information's can work against you a little bit, you know. So it's just kind of trying to find that balance. And what works for each guy individually up at the plate. But, man, we're as good as anybody once we link those at-bats together. You know, once we get going from the top of the order on down, we're a pretty tough team to beat.
So maybe keep it simple a little bit. Maybe not as much info. Just go out there and just rake and just keep it simple.
I don't know. If you got the recipe, send it over.
We're all looking for it, man, because when this team wins, it's a lot of fun. But listen, we're happy to see you playing so well. We've been pushing Torrey. Every week we have Torrey on with us. He does a show. We've been pushing him to give you more playing time. And to get the news today that you're going to get more playing time, we're excited. Congratulations on the great start to the season for yourself. Hopefully you can keep it up.
Thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate it.
Got it. John Ryan Murphy from the Arizona Diamondbacks, our guest here at the clubhouse, calling D-backs lose today 7-4, day off tomorrow before getting back at it on Friday.
All right, so there you have it. John Ryan Murphy joining Burns and Gambo this afternoon. That was following the 7-4 loss to Cincinnati. The Diamondbacks, though, do get the series win, their first series win since that series against Houston at the start of May, May 4th through the 6th. So nice to get that. You look at this homestand coming in, you see it's two quick series against Cincinnati and Miami. Nobody expects a turnaround where you're going to come home and just go 6-0. I mean, they had won 1 of 8 on that last road trip, and they had won 2 of 17 overall prior to this series. So I don't think anybody realistically expected them to come home and just go 6 straight wins. But there were a lot of encouraging signs in those first 3 games against Cincinnati, and these are two teams, you got to win both these series. You have to at least go 4-2. Because you're going out on the road against San Francisco and Colorado. Those are big games now. I know it's still June when they play those games. It's late May right now. It's June when they play San Francisco and Colorado. But this division looks like a 4-team race right now. And San Francisco's sort of the forgotten team. But they're getting Madison Bumgarner back. And they've found a way to hang around. And it's an even-numbered year. And we all know what San Francisco... Whatever it is, they play their better baseball in these years. So those are two big road series coming up. Get some momentum here against Cincinnati and carry it through the weekend here against Miami. We'll come back. Final segment of the show. We'll get you a quick update on the Stanley Cup. We'll talk about another event that is taking place on Twitter, and we'll get leftovers from Jarrett Carlin. That's next. It's The Rundown on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
The Rundown. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Final segment of the show here tonight. No NBA finals yet. That starts tomorrow. You can hear it right here on 98.7 FM, Arizona sports station. So there won't be a rundown tomorrow night. No Diamondbacks tonight because they already lost 7-4 to the Cincinnati Reds. There is game 2 of the Stanley Cup going on right now. 6 minutes left in the third period. Washington up on Vegas 3-2. Now, we've talked so much about Brian Colangelo and how he sort of took over Twitter last night.
My wife.
And potentially his wife took over Twitter, as it turns out. I don't know. That's the conversation this evening. But how about former ASU standout, Demarius Randle, who, let's see, the holiday weekend throws everything off. This was on Monday that he sent the tweet out. If the Cleveland Cavaliers win the 2018 NBA Finals, I'll buy everyone who retweets this a jersey. It's now up to 906,000 retweets.
It is the most retweeted tweet from a football player in history.
Yeah, and the previous high was by a punter, right? It's not like we're talking like an Aaron Rodgers tweet that got retweeted right. A million times or whatever.
It was another one like, retweet this and I'll donate to charity kind of thing.
Did you see his follow-up tweet later on Monday of 100% chance? Somebody tweeted, zero chance he delivers. He quote tweeted it with 100% chance. And then two, like, surfing hands. I don't know what he was doing there.
But then his latest thing was that he was just joking.
I don't see that tweet on his page.
Huh? I heard that today, that he was just joking and he thought he would get, like, 100 retweets.
Yeah, I have heard that, too. But right now, the only two tweets, unless that's a reply. I'm just looking at his home page. If the Cleveland Cavaliers win the 2018 NBA Finals, I'll buy everyone who retweets this a jersey. 906,000 retweets. So Darren Revell did the math the other day. I mean, it's gone through the roof even since then. But he was like, if it's $75 a jersey, it's going to be this much money. If it's $75 a jersey, he's going to $100 would be $90 million.
All right, here we go. Ready?
Yes.
This is via ESPN's Pat McManaman.
Okay.
Didn't he used to have a show on KTAR?
Yeah, sure.
Pat McMahon.
Yeah, something.
I definitely didn't think that, the Cleveland fan base would go this crazy about it. Obviously, it is a joke. Just to know how passionate this fan base is, it is really encouraging.
Look, I've seen a bunch of people I know that have retweeted it that aren't Cleveland fans.
Honestly, I didn't think it was going to get over 100 retweets, to be honest. He did say he would do something for the fans.
Well, first of all, lost in the shuffles, it doesn't matter. He should just stick with it right now because Cleveland's not going to win the championship anyway. But the odd twist to this is he plays for Cleveland. So this was intended to anger a bunch of Cleveland fans, right? That was the original intent. He's a Warriors fan. He was basically trying to drive home the point that Cleveland has no chance against his favorite NBA team. And so in doing so, he's on the hook for $90 million if LeBron goes off. When you put it that way, it's very possible that LeBron goes off. They're not going to win the series, though, so it really doesn't matter. He should just, if I'm Demarius Randle, I'm just digging my heels in and being like, I'm going to gather $90 million because it's not going to matter. Golden State's going to win the series. How do we feel about leftovers tonight, Jared? Are you ready?
Okay. Hello, I'm Dan Bickley, and I sound like a moron.
All right,
that's one of my new favorite.
That's a
things.
Great drop.
Is that a great drop?
Why?
That's from today.
Why?
We started the show today, and his microphone was acting up. You could even tell in the beginning of that soundbite, it sounds a little hollow.
Yes.
So, for the first minute of the show, it's like chaos. He's pressing buttons. He's trying to figure out how he does it. So then, in passing, he's just like sort of making fun of the situation. And I'll play it again here. He says the new famous line.
Hello, I'm Dan Bickley, and I sound like a moron.
Why did he say it like a robot?
I know. I don't know. It's great, though.
It's fantastic. That's why that's the greatest show ever, according to your intro on that show.
According to a lot of people.
Oh, okay.
If you could get someone to buy you any one jersey, what would it be?
Let's see.
Are you a jersey guy? I don't think I've ever seen you wearing a jersey.
I don't wear jerseys in here. I've got some hockey jerseys. I had a couple football jerseys. I've got an ASU jersey, football. Matt, yeah, it would be a hockey jersey. It would probably be, it might be like a Team USA hockey jersey.
Who's your favorite player of all time? Is it Lemieux?
I would probably say Sidney Crosby or Shane Doan, but I kind of take the Coyotes out of it because it's different when you work with them. So I would say Sidney Crosby because of, yeah,
okay.
Born in Pittsburgh, he plays the game the right way.
It seems very, very, very unlikely that Cleveland will beat Golden State 4 out of 7 times.
Yes.
Let's say the NBA Finals was a one-game winner-take-all.
Oh, interesting.
And okay. It was LeBron and the Cavs versus Golden State. Who would you take?
That might be the greatest question you've ever asked anybody.
I hope I remember it because I'm going to try to parlay it tomorrow into a topic.
I'm still going to go Golden State, but whereas now 7-game series, I would put Golden State's chances of winning at like 95%. In a one and done scenario against LeBron, like you never want to get to game 7 against LeBron. I don't care who you are. I'm saying it's like 55-45. Because there's only one way Cleveland can win. That's LeBron being dominant. Golden State, Steph Curry could exit. And he'd foul out in the first quarter, they could still win. You know, Kevin Durant can go off, or he could have a bad night. Curry could go off, or Klay Thompson could go off. So it's still Golden State, but well, you don't want to get in those one-and-dones with LeBron.
Yeah, and that's what Jared Dudley, when he was on, he was saying that it's just not fair that you have, when you lose your best player,
yes,
that should really hurt you.
Yeah.
And that's what Golden State has sort of like been able to hoodwink the system with.
They're immune to injury.
All right, so this is what I wanted to ask you earlier about hockey.
Oh, okay.
This is an age-old question that I'm sure you've heard 100 times in your life.
What is icing?
And I've never really heard a real good response to it.
Okay.
So you can explain this to me.
All right.
Why don't they just put a sumo wrestler as the goalie?
I don't have an answer for you.
You've probably heard that real non-hockey fans,
yeah,
especially.
I've had the thought myself when I was 10 years old. I'm like, why not just fit the biggest guy you can in the net as long as he's wearing skates?
Right.
I mean, he doesn't ever have to come out and play the puck. If he's that big, just wedge him in there.
Right.
The thing is, we're looking at the net right now. I mean, how big is a sumo wrestler really? Like 500 pounds? You can't be much bigger than that, if even that big.
Yeah, like 500 pounds.
So I still think NHL players would score on him because he's not going to fill the whole net, and he's not going to be able to move at all.
Well, a sumo wrestler is kind of agile.
On ice skates?
Why are you assuming that a sumo wrestler wouldn't know how to ice skate?
I just, it would be very difficult to ice skate quickly if you weigh 500 pounds.
But you're a goalie. How quickly do you have to be?
Well,
and then he's going to have pads on, too.
You got to move side to side, though.
So any, even if he doesn't completely fill up the goal, he's also going to have pads on.
I agree, but he's going to have to move side to side.
Why hasn't anyone tried? Like, I'm
like
sure
in the minor league.
Yeah, there's got to have been a minor league team that have tried this, right?
Not that I know of, no.
Do you remember when the Washington Bullets had Manute Bol and Muggsy Bogues on the same team?
Yes. That's not the same thing at all, but yes.
Oh, I guess you're right.
If you put the two of them in a hockey goal, it wouldn't help. They are going, I mean, the NHL is definitely going to the, we saw it with the Coyotes, like the taller the goalie, there's more emphasis on that now. I don't know why it took so long to get to that point, because he takes up more space, obviously, in the net.
All right, we're out of time here.
We're going to end on sumo wrestling.
We're out of our we're out of time. Look for our new video. Wrestler. Collar of Duty coming up.
If we make that, it's going to be great, but we haven't yet. All right, it's going to do it for us tonight. For Jared Carlin, Behind the Glass, and Luke Lipinski, thanks for listening to The Rundown on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.